And a big aloha. This is Cindy Palos and Talk Story, Maui's longest running talk show. Gosh, getting close to 31 years now I've been doing this. And over the 30 plus years I've been doing this radio show, we've never ever had times like we're going through right now. And we've seen a lot of different crises happen, but when we go through crises in the news cycle, usually there's something that might happen that affects us on Maui that might last a day, sometimes with the fire up to 3 or 4 days, but nothing that has a continued situation like we're going through with COVID-19. And because of that, I really want to direct my shows towards what we do about this. And I was reaching out to Dr. Michael Rim, who has a radio show here. In fact, he'll be on tomorrow morning at 7:05 on the air talking about just this subject and giving you a lot of information about it on his show. And we will, in the second part of the hour, I'll be talking to Richard Yes, the executor. He's the executive director of the Maui Food Bank. And they're doing some very important work there, obviously. They always are in need of food, and at this time, things are getting even more drastic about that. So we'll be talking about the Maui Food Bank. But right now, I want to welcome Dr. Mike. Can I call you Dr. Mike?
Sure, please. That's the name of the show, so it's fine with me. It sounds good. Thank you.
Well, let's give a little bit of your background. You've been practicing child and adolescent and adult psychiatry for nearly 30 years. You were in New Zealand for a while, weren't you?
Yeah, that was really one of the best, most formative, some of the best formative years of my life down there for about 8 years.
Yeah.
Yeah, it was really exciting.
I love New Zealand. New Zealand's a beautiful, beautiful place, isn't it?
Yeah, it's an amazing. It's an amazing place. We were very fortunate to be there for as long as we were and raised our children half of their lives there and half here on Maui. And it was very exciting there, and not to intend to talk about this now, but there was an epidemic, a big issue with what people call youth suicide, which is something that we should speak about differently, but nonetheless, we organized our clinic and developed a clinic around that, and it was very exciting, very scary, and learned a lot, and we were quite successful in many areas. But that was quite a while ago.
And you work with your wife.
Very exciting.
Your wife is Dr. Gabriel. Isn't it Galler?
Gallerin, Dr. Gabby Gallerin, yes.
Yeah. And you do Gallerin Behavioral Health Services. You also worked as a clinical director of Maui Family Guidance Center up until 2010, right?
Yeah, that was also a really wonderful experience as well in many respects, yeah.
So
I'm sorry?
Because you've had such a long and extensive experience with youth, we'll talk about that aspect, but also what we're all going through. It seems like right now there's a lot of things we can talk about. What one is, families are more together for longer inside than I can ever remember. Sometimes you have holidays, you know, right? There's the Christmas and Thanksgiving, and families are together, but, you know, that's in between here on Maui. We're all in between running out and running around and doing things. Are you thinking and seeing some more stress factors, not just because of all the rather horrifying news that we're hearing and seeing, but also with families having to be in a close quarters dealing with each other, kind of locked in a situation together so closely?
Yeah, well, of course, and I'm seeing a lot of that, and what's interesting, fascinating, and apropos is that most of my career has been about the mental health matters I've been involved with have a lot to do with how people live together and are organized together as families or groups of people, and which is now being tested even more so. And so it's very apropos, very consistent with the mental health makeover show I'm trying to promote in terms of how the mental health system in general and substance abuse systems have been in crisis for a long time prior to this. And the primary part of the crisis has been the epidemic of isolation we have and the lack of focus on the importance of what is currently now being appreciated as the most valuable human resource ever. And as one of our heroes, Joni Mitchell, said, you don't know what you've got until it's gone. So, we are currently in we've been in a crisis of isolation epidemic for a good 20, 30, 40 years, a lot. And now that it's being forced on us, we're realizing, well, wait a second, what about that human engagement? And so hopefully, the practices and things I've been privileged to be a part of over these years are going to even get more attention. And hopefully will not just change, will change the way we live together as a community in general, but will also hopefully influence some significant changes that are needed in the mental health and substance abuse areas.
Well, do you have
a little
bit
more of an answer than you were asking
no,
for?
No,
but,
it's true, but how
I'm sorry?
How do we deal with our families in each other's faces, the kids, the parents? Sometimes if they were getting upset with each other, someone would go out or take a walk. You can still do that. But what would you suggest for people
to do? Well, first
of
all, I think people should understand that it is the most important, again, as I said, underutilized resource, number one. Number two is that a lot of us are just not going to be good at it because it's been marketed against. It's been our culture has pushed us away from these things, so we just have to accept the fact, you know, we're not going to be really good at it. But that doesn't mean that we can't embrace it as something to focus on.
Mm-hmm.
So, yeah, being in the same room with people is easy. It's what you do with them when you're in there.
Yeah.
That's the challenge.
Yes.
So I think the first thing to know is that, this is going to be hard. Number one. Number two, it's not our fault, but we haven't had much practice in doing this. We outsource, mm-hmm. Human connections these days.
Yeah.
And there's even a lot of literature about this. There's one of my favorite books called The Collapse of Parenting, which talks about how, for all these reasons, you know, the family members and parents and elders have just been almost put out to pasture. Mm-hmm. In many ways, and adults are more afraid of children and teenagers in general than ever.
Mm-hmm.
And usually it's kind of the other way around, and forgive me if I'm overstating that. So just to say, this is really important, and we might not be so good at it, that's okay. So we have to just pay attention to that. Now, one of the things to pay attention to in general is you know, and again, these are all village concepts, you know, community concepts.
Mm-hmm.
You know, all of which are very, very key to our mental health. You know, our brain and the environment are pretty much kind of the same thing. It interacts together. So even though it seems separate, what happens around us is our brains develop because of that. So what happens around us is very important for what happens inside of us, and vice versa. So the first thing is to say, okay, where are the different people in our context, in our family, in our home that we're isolating with, where are they in their phase of life? You know, what ages are they? And what, according to their cultural values, beliefs, and most importantly, the practices through which we live our values and beliefs, which of course those practices include who we talk to, who we don't talk to, who we quote-unquote consult to help us do things, teachers, friends, aunts, uncles, doctors, leaders, you know. Who are these people, and what's a reasonable role for them to have in a hierarchical manner, you know?
Mm-hmm.
Because throughout civilization, throughout history, we've had real moms and dads, as we should, and we've also had those types of figures, you know, in multiple ways, leaders, spiritual leaders, God, etc., for good reason, you know, because we're always going to be a little scared. We were born and evolved to be a little scared, and we have to.
But I have to insert here, you know, for people with teenagers, and you work a lot with teenagers.
Yeah, yeah.
Teenagers have been spending a lot of time before, even obviously, on their phones, their computers, and maybe now with more time than ever. I was shocked that I actually put on last week a record 7 hours a day on my iPhone. 7 hours.
You did, wow.
I did. Now, but that includes doing things like Facebook Live and sharing posts. And if you do a Facebook Live thing, that whole time is considered time on your phone.
Right.
But for kids who are already doing this, there's so much more now happening on the phone, right? There's streaming free concerts. There's all this information.
Yeah.
There's stuff, overload, really, of information coming in. Some of it right, some of it wrong. But I think a lot of it is really trying to understand and comprehend. And by understanding and comprehending, we want to control it. But it doesn't seem to really do anything, right? So what do we do with these kids who are trying to even now spend possibly more time? Just let them do it? Is that a good thing? Or do we just let them go ahead and spend more
time? No, that's a good point. Because, again, our roles as their parents or the elders is to say, what are people going to do with their time? What do they need from us? They need guidance from us. And the most important thing here is engagement. Engagement, developmentally appropriate engagement, human contact. So there's a big difference between social distancing and social isolation. So what there's and there's good media and there's bad, there's good use of social media and bad use of social media. So we want to model for our teenagers that we ourselves are taking care of ourselves and we're engaging properly with other people who make us feel good and competent and secure, and then guide our children. Yeah, social media right now is medicine, we want to promote engagement. And if they do that on social media with and doing good, positive things with people that are fun, engaging, warm, caring with other people, then that's what the world is currently doing a lot. And there's lots of things happening like that in our country. So, yeah, anything we and the media, the social media that you're referring to, the screen addiction and the screen time, is another matter. Hopefully, I'll speak with on my show one day, because the studies are showing that's bad for the outcomes of people in between the ages of 20 and 30s, what many people are referring to as FaceTime addiction, and there's lots of studies that support that. It's a tough thing to do. And we've been losing a lot of our human engagement with our teenagers anyway, and adults. The extent to which they're doing isolating things on the social media rather than engaging with warm, fuzzy people.
That's a good point. I mean, you know, what's the warm, fuzzy, and which is the good, and then trying to monitor that without getting the anger and the fights going on. It's like,
We might get. See, that's the thing, though. You know, being a parent is the hardest job. It's the most underappreciated, undervalued job in the world. And we have to accept as parents that we have to know how to see our children suffer and learn from their mistakes, but not suffer from irreversible harm. So our children, by definition, have to learn how to be angry. And we have to learn how to, and they, the best way for them to learn that is with their parents. So there's not a free pass that I've ever come across, nor with our children we've raised, knock on wood, fairly well. Being angry is something we have to know how to do as parents and being angry with our children, and we have to know that being angry as children and teenagers is very normal. They have to learn how to be angry because there's a lot of things to be angry about. And then we have to know that they can be angry and that their anger cannot paralyze us. That we can handle it. We're elders. So we can handle their anger and their feelings, whether they believe it or not. We have to know that we can do that. So yes, they might get angry. But hopefully we don't want everyone yelling and screaming at each other right now. So
no,
we don't
that
want
would
to
not
cause any major ordeals.
That would be difficult.
But just people just need to know, and you know, in general, but you know, now people have to do the best they can to keep the peace, of course. Whatever's No, I'm not expecting, you know, I don't think people should just all of a sudden change what they're doing. But just to know that, it's more important that the teenagers see their parents and elders modeling how they are dealing with this crisis themselves. And then also say, do whatever it's going to work to keep the peace in your home. mm-hmm. knowing that it might be difficult. And knowing if people are going to get upset and angry, I would expect them to.
That's a good point. Because you know what? I think that we do run away from expressing anger. But this is another conundrum. How do we deal with trying to do that and still try to keep the peace, of course? Do you suggest people try to now develop a time? It used to be around a dinner table, but you know, I don't know if that's going to be appropriate now or not. A time where we can allow everyone in the family to express their upset, their anguish, their fears. I know you've dealt with kids who considered suicide. Is this going to be at a time where they're even in more risk? How do you deal with a way to communicate and release that in a family situation?
Well, if everybody had a family dinner every day, and no matter what they talked about, and the purpose of the family dinner was to see the whoever the parent figures are like really good, and they're at peace, and they're confident, and they're respectful of the elders around the dinner table, mother, father, whoever. And no matter what people talk about, the mental health, I would lose a lot of patience.
Really?
Patience.
Really?
Oh, yeah, the world will be way, 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 way better, and people know that. I mean, I've actually prescribed that, and I have sometimes people come in and have family dinners here in my office or family meals just to say, you know, it's not rocket science here.
Yeah.
But we have, and if that happens, all kinds of chemicals and hormones and things and nervous system things are happening that were supposed to happen as we evolved as social creatures.
Uh-huh.
So whether you talk about your issues and what's bothering you or not, believe it or not, is important, but not as important as just knowing that these things are there for us.
Mm-hmm. Now, I assume, Dr. Mike, that you're not talking about having dinner together in front of the TV with the TV on, right?
Oh. You know, I had saw a 12-year-old, 13-year-old girl years and years ago who everyone was scared, freaking out. She was having a eating disorder, anorexia. She'd been in treatment for a long, long time, et cetera, et cetera. And they were, Hispanic family, and the mother just could not. She was here on Maui, but she really could not. She was very depressed and like living like she was in the old country. And so they'd have dinner every night, and they would watch TV. And they just turned the TV off, essentially, and the girl got a lot better. I mean, it was not that mm-hmm. simple. But just they had to engage with each other. Not watching TV. No cell phones. I wish I would have done better with that with our kids. We did okay. Mm-hmm. No people. No cell phones, no TV. Just people like, you know, or we've been doing throughout civilization, you know, essentially. And some families, it's really cool, I think, that I work with here. I've worked with lots of different cultures. I think it's a Hindu family. They have pictures of their ancestors on the wall in the kitchen, in the living room, in the dining room.
Mm.
I mean, that's great.
Yeah, yeah.
It's like everybody's there.
Yeah.
And everybody really is there.
Yeah, it's true.
We sit down at dinner. You know, my mom and dad are there. My grandparents, my ancestors, they're all here.
Mm-hmm.
And it's a wonderful thing. So, yeah, so that's... a very powerful intervention.
How do we deal with is the coping thing of not knowing how bad, how long, you know, we don't know how long this is going to be going on, and we don't know how bad it's going to really get. We like to be in control of our lives. Our whole patterns have been completely turned upside down. There's no norm. Mm-hmm. Our normalcy as we have known it is gone. And so what are some of the tools to deal with that?
You know, I think that the specific tools will be unique for each situation. But I think as people, I think we'll do what we've always done throughout history when there is a sense of loss of control and powerlessness. And that, you know, we'll have some leaders out there who we rely on to do the best they can to provide as much order and sense of order as possible. And that we have confidence in, and I have to underline that, like, in bold letters,
mm-hmm.
that the leaders and the information sources that we have confidence in, we've always had to look up to that, whether they were right or wrong, and then get as much guidance as we can from them, and then make the decisions we make based on that, and focus on as much order as we can on a daily basis.
Okay, well,
knowing that it could be wrong.
Well, I've got my next guest that's called in, and I just want to thank you, Dr. Michael Rim. What's the best way for people to contact you or go to your website?
Oh, yeah, so thanks for that. They can call our office at 572-4500, or they can go to, I think it's www.gallerim.com. And I think the radio show is now available on podcast. And I would just love to hear from folks, because what people are doing, you know, and what's working. And I would be focusing on as much positive things as possible, because there's a lot of it out there, and there's a lot of it going on.
And again, they can listen tomorrow morning at 7:05 to your radio show,
right,
on this station, KOI 1110, mm-hmm, and also on 98.7 FM.
Yeah.
And you do a wonderful job, and I appreciate your input, and you taking the time to give us a free consult today.
Well, I hope it's helpful. I really hope it's helpful, and I'm trying. We're all trying as hard as we can. And everybody, by the way, everybody should have a job. A 6-year-old should have a job. A 14-year-old should have a job to help. That 6-year-olds do, or 14-year-olds do, or 30-year-olds do.
That's good to
know.
That's
important.
Yeah.
Yeah. About the COVID. A 6-year-old should know it's important to wash your hands and tell his friends to do it.
That's good job. Yeah, that's a good job.
That's a very important job.
It is.
And make mommy and daddy and the teachers really happy that's what they did for their part.
Well, thank you. Thank you.
Thank you very much.
Thank you for calling. And a big aloha to
my
you.
My pleasure.
Aloha.
Likewise. Thank you.
Bye-bye.